Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This is Cleveland Sports Radio, 92.3 The Fan.
Audio courtesy of Guardians TV. We're back in business. Away we go. You know how I know the Guardians won last night? I wouldn't have to watch the game. You know how I would know the Guardians won last night?
How's that?
Because I woke up this morning at 3:03. I had the thing where I wasn't sure if I set my alarm, so I woke up early. Like, I was waking up and I checked my alarm, and then I couldn't, like, fall back asleep. And I went, fine, I'm up, 3:03, that's it. And I checked my phone, and there were no nasty texts. There were no nasty tweets. I went, oh, they must have won last night. And they did. Because I fell asleep in the seventh inning, and I just was sitting in front of the couch or sitting on the couch, and I totally passed out. Sorry about that. And by the time I woke back up, it was on the blank screen again. And I said, well, we'll find out. And they ended up winning. And I'm very happy about that.
Thank God.
And thank you are 100% right about that. They're ranked 22nd right now in the power rankings, according to The Athletic.
It feels the times worse.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter because they're back in second place in the division. Well, yeah, guys, come on.
It's such a... This is the weirdest thing about it, man. Like, their history tells you... Like, there's people who've been saying some wild stuff about the Guardians. And I'm going to get to somebody who was way meaner yesterday than I could ever be about certain parts of the fan base here. They always kind of stop you from being like, hey, man, you better be careful about what you're saying here. You don't go too far into the abyss on the Cleveland Indians or Cleveland Guardians. Like, when you talk about the Browns, it's like, okay, there's a chance where it's like it's going up to the side of the wall. Now it's hit the wall. Now it's rolling off the wall. Now it's falling into the trenches, and that's it. Like, it's off the side of the mountain. So there is always a point where you're like, yep, you can go in on the Browns, and there's not going to be any retribution from the season. Like, no one's going to tell you you're wrong because that's where the season's going. With the Guardians, how many times over the last decade has there been tough talk at a certain point and then, all right, they're going to rip off 10 in a row, and now they're back in first place, or they're back in four games up in the wild card and all like that. So there's always that like kind of like picking away fear in the back of your head going, boy, you better watch what you say. Yeah, things ain't very good, but you better be careful. But they won 3-2 yesterday over the Giants. Rafael Devers, he made his debut for the San Francisco Giants, which is, again, this is the first blockbuster of the year for the for Major League Baseball. He ended up going 2-for-5 with as a DH. Said he'd play any position they wanted him to, which is an interesting thing because he wouldn't do that for the Boston Red Sox. Probably just signed his contract and wanted out. Ended up getting what he wanted, and I'm going to San Francisco, and I'm sure San Francisco is a nice place. I've never been there. You've been there?
No, never been to San Fran.
Oh, and you've traveled all over the country?
Never been there.
None of us have ever been to San Fran.
I have.
All right, Mitch, what's your take on San Francisco?
It's a beautiful city. The weather in there is always very nice comparative to outside the city is 10 degrees warmer.
Oh.
Very welcoming people.
Welcoming people. All right, I'll take that.
Must be a haven for the foodies. The foodies must be one of the best culinary scenes in all the country.
It's the Midwest of Northern California.
I told you that sushi was cheaper than ours, though. That listener who went on that trip and had the sushi sit-down meal, it was only $2.25 a person. But they had a San Francisco surcharge at $144 on the entire dinner, which cost $3,100. We had this segment yesterday where I brought up that there were some even credentialed media that started to wonder at 35 and 35 if the Guardians should do, quote unquote, do right by Jose Ramirez. And you and I had that segment, had that conversation. And we were you beat the trash can loud enough and somebody, one rat is going to come out of the sewer. All right? It happens. So I'm not going to sit there and say I was shocked at the amount of people who were like, well, think about it, Ken. Okay, fine. But I was definitely in disagreement with the idea of ever moving on from Jose Ramirez, and you were certainly with me on that. I think the entire room is certainly on that. So yes, it was a way to kind of give a highlight to a still vast minority, although a loud minority. Whether they're mad at the Guardians, mad that they don't do enough, quote unquote, where, you know, if you're likening it to Joe Thomas or Mike Trout, I'm sorry, you're just off base. I'm not sorry, you're just way off base. They've been to the postseason six times with Jose. They've been to two ALCS. They've been to a World Series with Jose. They've been a very successful franchise with Jose Ramirez. They just haven't won at all. And you can't guarantee championships, not in baseball, not anywhere. So you can do as much as you can, but there's plenty of guys out there who were considered great players who never won a World Series, who never won a championship at all. I thought you and I were pretty strong about it. Boy, Nick was downright mean. Did you hear Nick yesterday?
A little bit.
I'll play this for everybody. Nick was just nasty with some of the people who might be kicking around the idea of trading away Jose. Hit it.
To me, if you think that they should do the right thing by Jose Ramirez, you're actually not a Guardians fan. You're not. You want to trade them. You want Jose to want out to humiliate an organization who you think doesn't spend enough damn money. I'm not trying to go at all Guardians fans. We're going to the 3%. There's nothing that that team can do that will please them short of winning the World Series. To send them out of town so you can sit here and go, see, I told you. Because you're a toddler who can't handle things that are outside your purview or your understanding of how baseball works.
Well, but it also, it makes it seem as if like Jose's being held hostage here. Anyway, the amount of players that go through their entire career. Mike Trout's never won a playoff game. Ichiro never won a World Series. Like, I don't love the idea that it's being spun as if Jose Ramirez in going to a World Series and is playing multiple ALCS is in some sort of poverty situation.
So I hear Nick, and boy, that's strong commentary. Respect what he has to say. I think that we're in this, but I think that we're in this mode where we're watching some of these guys, and we are reacting to other people on the internet, reacting to other people on social media, whatever it might be. And Anthony, I do think that there is this section of fans. I do think that there is a section of folks that are baseball first fans, but they've become Randy Quaid cynical with this team. You know, do you understand what I mean? Do you remember Randy Quaid in Major League Two?
Yeah.
Like the cross out over the logos and everything. Like, I think that they've become that way. So then when the team's good and they get that close and they don't get over the hump, and then the team, to us, we say, well, they can't. They can't make these investments in their franchise. And they go, no, Ken. No Anthony, no Nick, they won't make those investments in their franchise. There is right there a brick wall between us, a lot of fans, and those fans. So I can't, it's weird.
So what are you asking me?
I'm just talking about what Nick said. I don't have a question.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a growing percentage of the fan base that, you know, they hate the owners. There's nothing. They will look back, and because they didn't win the World Series in 2016, because they didn't win it in 2017, those efforts don't even matter anymore. And they're so long ago. And then the other playoff runs, like last year's playoff run, now that's not even going to mean much to the fans because they didn't spend in this offseason. The fact they shed. They don't care about the TV deal, obviously. What fan is sitting there wondering about expenses? Like, you don't care about you don't care about any of their bills. So why all of a sudden would you care about any of that? So yeah, there's a huge, I don't even know if it's a segment. I think it's probably the majority of Guardians fans now have gone into the negative because they follow up the season two prong. They didn't spend money and they don't seem like a very good baseball team this year.
But I think it's so much more complicated than that. I think we could simplify the other two teams, but I think with the Guardians, it's much more complicated. I think there's a general fan base, part of the general fan base that goes, well, they're never going to spend, so I shouldn't care, and yeah, just get rid of them. They are baseball. They take in baseball halfway through the year, and then they're getting ready for football or maybe basketball season.
It's a wake me up when they make the playoffs.
But I do think there is a contingent of a very hardcore, strong Guardians fan base, which, hey, this is general conversation, general sports talk. I don't even know if they listen. You know what I mean? I think that they're in on, Keith Law, Buster Olney, Jeff Passan. I think that they're in on David Sampson conversations. I think that they are, you know, eating all that stuff
up.
The
diehards.
Which is their thing. That's fine. But I think that it has made them, because baseball's their number one. They love the game. They live and die with the game. And they have become disenchanted with the ownership of the Dolans. And even though they love baseball so much, it's almost like, well, let's take away the greatest thing that we have because they don't deserve it. That ownership doesn't deserve it. They don't deserve to reap the rewards of the fan base.
Yeah,
see, that's why I won't go as far as Nick. I mean, Nick has drawn a line in the sand, man. And I give him credit for it. But I'm like, damn, that's... I won't even go that far.
Yeah, I'm never... Just maybe it's because of what I do for a living. So maybe we're the wrong people. Maybe we're in a different kind of a bubble. But I'm never going to sit here and root against the owners for the teams, because those are our teams.
No.
So why would I want to penalize the owners when in turn it penalizes me, everybody I care about that is into sports, people that work down there?
Mm-hmm.
That would be the all-time selfish move.
Yeah, understood. But I do think that it's weird. If Dan Gilbert, if the Cavs won a championship and Dan Gilbert held the trophy again, I think a lot of people go, wow, Dan, I mean, you did what you could and you won another championship. Congratulations. I do think that if the Browns won the Super Bowl, yes, there's definitely been consternation with the Haslams over the last decade plus. But I think some people go, well, you know what? You stuck with something and you finally got it right some way, somehow. Holy Toledo, you did it, finally. I do think that there would be some people, if the Dolans won the World Series and they gave the trophy to Paul Dolan, I don't feel this way. I'd go, hey, you know what? He's done a good job of owning this baseball team. He's done a good job of giving us something to watch as best he can with what they have to work with as a business. I would think he earns it. I think there would be some people going, get the trophy to somebody else. I don't want to see you with the trophy. I really do. I really, really
yeah.
do.
Yeah, and fine.
I don't like, feel I that don't, way, but I think that there are definitely people who feel that way.
I didn't get into sports to worry about the approval rating of owners. I mean, it's what we do because we take calls from the people every day.
Well, we have to in baseball.
But I don't. I mean, if the Guardians win the World Series, I think it's a validation of the merits of the ownership. That doesn't mean that the approval rating is always going to be at the day after you win something, the approval rating is pretty damn high. But, I mean, even in New England, you know, Robert Kraft with all the Super Bowls, the minute he said goodbye to Bill Belichick, there was a huge faction of New England fans that were like, all right, I don't like this. I don't like this at all. So owners are just out there. They represent everything.
Yeah.
And in the end, most people end up just hating the owners.
Well, it goes back to that same conversation we had yesterday where you compare the Steelers with the Guardians. Like, there are people who they go, man, the Rooneys have lost touch with the fans. They don't know what the fans want anymore. They just want to be people who open up the stadium, dust off the seats, get Steelers fans in there. You win enough game to maybe make the playoffs, and then that's it. They don't want to rock the boat. They just want to own their business. They don't want to really go for the gusto. I think now, but we look at them, and I go, I got to tell you, as much as I hate the Steelers, I got to respect the Rooneys and how they run their organization. I mean, there's been so many chances over the last how many years for that thing to run truly off the rails. You consider the cavalcade of goofballs that have actually played for that team. There's so many chances for that thing to get off the rails, and it hasn't. And for the Guardians, it's like, man, it's quiet. They go about their business. They bring up guys. There's guys that are successful. There's trades that don't necessarily work out for us. We know that. But overall, they end up winning more games than they lose, and they end up in the postseason more often than they don't.
Yeah, when they are outspent by enormous sums of money. So they've found a way to do as much as they possibly could with the least amount. I know there's just a bunch of fans who just don't they pass on baseball because of the inequity of the sport and because they have an owner that's not spending money. So it's easy. It's an easy pass. Like, yeah, maybe they'll go there a few times with their buddies over the summer, but they're never gonna put the Guardians in the same category as the other teams in town.
I have a yes or no question to ask you. Do you think the Guardians have raised the white flag on the season?
No.
Sheldon all over Clark, and oh, they get into it a bit here. Lexi Hall now gets in Sheldon's face. Caitlin Clark hits the deck. Big Ten against Big Ten, Ohio State and Iowa.
It is getting spicy, and part of that has been J.C. Sheldon and Caitlin Clark just going at it all game.
Ooh, and Marina Mabry. I missed that one, Edona.
Oh, I missed that one, too. Yeah, it looked like Caitlin got hit hard, both by J.C. Sheldon and Marina Mabry there.
Friend of the show, J.C. Sheldon, who's been on this show and on the pod former Ohio State Buckeye, audio courtesy of NBC Sports.
She's a spark plug.
Laying the hammer down. We have a watershed moment in the WNBA, folks. The star, the biggest star that they have going for them, hits the deck on national television. I don't know what the rating was. Lima, you're pretty in tune on basketball ratings.
Well, her game over the weekend got a massive rating in her return. When she went off in the first quarter, she was shooting three balls from like 30 feet.
Well, when you're in the Commissioner's Cup.
And yeah, and you add the dimension of the Commissioner's Cup.
Do we have audio of the coaches talking about the refs and everything?
This we've got.
All right, give me Stephanie White. She's the head coach of the Indiana Fever, correct? Stephanie White, the head coach of the Fever. This is after these fouls, this quagmire, this scrumble.
Well, you had that, and then a rumble at the end of the game, too. People got ejected.
There was more?
Yes.
Oh, but wait, there's more.
Yes.
Sheldon going coast to coast. And here we got another break is here as J.C. Sheldon goes right after Sophie Cunningham. It was a hard foul, no question.
Buddy, you want to take that next step as a pro sport? You got that. Scrums and fights and things like that, that's part of it. Now, I don't want to see malice in the palace in the WNBA. People, I don't want people going into the stands. But you know it. Any major sport, people are playing for high stakes. There's jealousy involved. There's paychecks are involved here.
Got to win the cup.
There's the survival instinct. There's going to be a fight.
All right, so we got to tell people what happened here.
Yes.
Because the broadcasters missed half of it. So Caitlin Clark is trying to catch the ball at the top of the key. Sheldon kind of, does it look like an eye rake?
Yeah.
So it looks like an eye rake.
She's not Mr. Fuji for crying out loud.
Same thing that cost Darius Garland half a season.
Right. So Clark, I mean, the ball is loose. They blow the whistle and she is just like, come on. So her back is turned. Then it looks like right in the preliminary, it looks like Sheldon then kind of makes contact with her again. Then out of nowhere, this Mabry, this other woman, and then it almost looks like a tag team from the other girl, like the two bigger girls.
Yes.
And she gets tossed. Caitlin Clark gets chest bumped right to the ground. And no one's really helping Caitlin Clark out to start out.
This is unbelievable.
And Clark's walking the other way. Like, Clark is not trying to start a fight here. I mean, she's not happy.
No.
She's bitching to everybody who will listen.
At what point?
But she walks to the other end of the floor.
At what point are you watching here? At what point are you watching? Excuse me. Look at the clock on the floor. Mm-hmm. Look at the clock. Where's the clock at?
4:48.
Okay, because later on at 3:24, Caitlin Clark is like doing the Hulk Hogan to the crowd to get the crowd going in this game. Mitch was right. That place is pandemonium for WNBA basketball. This is incredible.
Well, it's got to be a sellout, right? It's packed.
It says Gainbridge on the thing, so I'm imagining it's at home.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I just want to make sure it's at home in Indiana. She has got the crowd going. The crowd is going nuts. They're reacting to her. There's definitely a technical. There's definitely people about to get thrown out here. J.C. Sheldon and Sophie Cunningham. Don't you even start. There was a kerfuffle at the end of this, and we have audio.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
In the post game, Stephanie White, this is the head coach of the Indiana Fever here. She went right on about the refs.
There wasn't an explanation for the tech that she got. You know, I think it was pretty obvious that stuff was brewing. When the officials don't get control of the ballgame, when they allow that stuff to happen, and it's been happening all season long. It's not just this game. It's been happening all season long. This is what happens, right? This is what happens. You've got competitive women who are the best in the world at what they do, right? And when you allow them to play physical and you allow these things to happen, they're going to compete, and they're going to have their teammates' backs. It's exactly what you expect out of fierce competition. So I started talking to the officials in the first quarter, and we knew this was going to happen. You could tell it was going to happen. So they got to get control of it. They got to be better.
It's really true. Because I believe Caitlin Clark got a technical as well, correct?
Yes. Yeah, that's what they were talking about this start.
There shouldn't be really a problem, or there shouldn't have been a reason for her to get a technical, for what anybody said. And I think that
she put her eye in that.
This is a year and a half of, like, at first it's like, all right, yeah, there's going to be some
rookie
people
hazing. Yeah.
Yeah, because I remember, like, I likened it last year a little bit to LeBron. Like, when LeBron first came in the league, there were some guys who kind of took umbrage with the amount of fame that he was getting, and then they took liberties with him to a degree on the floor. And that's when I first found out, like, Z was a real one, because he'd come right in there and swoop in, and he'd have his face right in other people's faces, like, we're not doing this. And guys would kind of back off after a while. And I think the league started to call it a little bit different, like, hey, this is a star. The WNBA has not done that with Caitlin Clark. And then she was out for 2 weeks with the injury, and people were thinking, okay, now you got your biggest star injured. People were able to get faked out about how little the ticket prices were without Caitlin Clark on the floor.
Yeah, the ratings immediately tanked.
Exactly.
And the league was irrelevant for 2 weeks without her.
So she's back, and now you have this fight going on. Yes.
Well, if you want to get guys like me who kind of poo-pooed the league last year to watch the league more, you got to have more of this. And you got to have more of this in the post game.
Can you specifically detail what you mean by get control of the game, just to be in your words?
Get control of the game is call the fouls that are actually happening on the floor. Right, and consistently call the fouls that are actually happening on the floor. Okay, not just if somebody swings and misses, right? Like, consistently call the fouls.
Coach, do you think it's something pertaining to your team, or do you think this is a league-wide issue?
Well, I've seen quite a few dust-ups in the league so far, so I think it's a league-wide issue. I mean, bad officiating is bad officiating.
I mean, she's right. If you come out and set the tone early, there's not going to be much. If you just start letting them swing on people, then yeah, they're going to take matters into their own hands, and you're going to let the game get out of control the way this did last night.
There's a bunch of stuff happening here. Because people, by the way, what I do like, I'll just be flat out honest, I love that in this case it was white on white, because people have been trying to make it a race issue in every one of these games. Anytime it's one of the black players and the league was predominantly black, they try to make it a race issue, and the Clay Travises of the world and everybody tried to jump on that. And in this case, it was just J.C. Sheldon. We had her on. She's the Ohio State girl, Dublin Kaufman, I think.
Yes.
So this is finally, I think people are seeing what it really is. It has nothing to do with race in this case. It has everything to do with this league. You know, Caitlin Clark is bringing so many eyeballs. She is selling the tickets. Nobody else is selling the tickets. She is selling tickets. And this is... These are the craziest crowds any of these players, most of them, have ever played. I mean, unless they were in UConn, they are crazy. And the crowds have been electric, right? The ratings have been incredible.
Yeah.
It's bringing out so many people to watch these games. And these girls are trying to calculate, how can I make a name for myself? And part of it, instead of, you would think it would be, hey, trying to shut her down. Instead, it's, I'm going to be dirty. I'm going to play dirty, and I'm going to keep it up, because their coaches are clearly telling them, do everything you can to take the ball out of her hands, face guard her, get under her skin, get into her head. Because at times, Caitlin Clark, you can get into her head a little bit. She clearly is bothered. She's barking at refs
the
whole game.
Championship game a couple of years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, she's good enough where she overcomes it. I mean, she's so amazing that at times it can be counterproductive. But all these girls are trying to build their Instagram followings. They're all trying to make more money, because the salaries are so pathetic in the WNBA that this is how they think they can make more money.
Well,
and I guess we'll see. We'll see in the end if, like, creating these rivalries are going to matter and affect their bottom line.
Well, not that I'm going to say you're wrong. I don't think you're wrong. I think there's definitely people who look at it and go, well, this is my chance here. And they probably don't like her for a bunch of different reasons, even though that a star like that's going to drive up everybody's salary. So I say, in a quiet way, when you go back to the locker room, she'll probably be high-fiving over the type of star that she is.
Of course.
Because everybody's going to be making money.
It's like Tiger Woods. I'll never forget reading the book that John Feinstein, because not the Armin Katayan book, the original John Feinstein book. There were notable veterans on tour that were like, why are all the cameras following this kid? He's done nothing. And then it took them about literally a month to realize, oh, he's way better than all of us.
Yeah.
And so they're like, we should probably, and you're not guarding Tiger Woods on a golf course.
Well, I think with
you know
some,
what, you're just competing with him. And then they all realize, oh, he can make us a lot of money. And the purses grew exponentially. And so you didn't see those veterans talking anymore. But that's not happening right now. This is year two of Caitlin Clark, and they are still trying to rough her up.
In the But that's the frustration, I think, that everybody, if you have any interest at all, I understand that anytime we talk about women's basketball, there's going to be guys, I'm sure there's tweets out there to tell us to stop talking about women's basketball. Okay, Shador, women's basketball, okay? We'll get back to it. I think that that's what's frustrating to anybody who likes basketball and has watched her over the last 2 years in the WNBA. Is that everybody in the world wants to say she's a star, except for the league she plays for, except for the people who are calling the fouls, except for everybody. I mean, nobody in the WNBA seems to want to admit that she's the star. She's their version of Michael Jordan. Nobody. Everybody outside does. The ticket prices do. The new media deals that her presence is forcing does.
16,000 last night.
Thank you. The new people that had no idea. I couldn't name the teams in the WNBA. And still to a degree, I can't. But when it comes to promotion, hey, I'm pretty good at being a carnival barker out there. And it's like, guys, when you're on TV, it's Caitlin Clark. Caitlin Clark, come watch Caitlin Clark. And by osmosis, you will learn more about the New York Liberty. You will learn more about the Connecticut Sun. You will learn more about the new team, the Valkyries in Golden State. And by osmosis, you would learn more about the new Cleveland team that would be coming around. Like, use that. And it's like everybody else wants to do it, and it seems that the WNBA doesn't. And I think that that's what some of the outside frustration is. Yes.
And you learn more about the Commissioner's Cup.
Well, that's about the game, too.
Yeah, well, I mean, you guys came for basketball.
Yeah,
let's
no,
talk
seriously.
About basketball.
Yeah.
Come on now.
What do you think of just how you all were able to pull away in the second half, Caitlin, in particular?
We're going to the Commissioner Cup Championship.
Let's
that's
go!
Pretty exciting. Y'all want to talk about that? Let's talk about that.
Ella seems sarcastic from her.
Right now, I'm not interested.
Absolutely was 100%.
Yes. Yeah.
She's made me want to watch her play basketball and watch everything around her. And I did not care at all when she was playing for a national championship, you know, half mile away from us. Didn't care. I care about this now.
There are ways to get around this. It is the most important position on the team. And you might not know this year if Shador and Dylan are going to be something down the road. So those guys aren't going anywhere. They're keeping Dylan and Shador. Those guys are going to make the football team. So you can pretty much take that to the bank. And then it's just a matter of trying to figure out what you would want to do with Joe and Kenny. And I think both of them will play this year.
That's Mary Kay Cabot on Baskin and Phelps yesterday. She'll join us tomorrow, 8:20 this morning, saying to take it to the bank. That it's going to be Dylan Gabriel and Shador Sanders both making the team, which I got to tell you, I've listened to some national pundits here. I know it's a time of year where you know, people have to start trying to change what they've seen so far, what they've heard so far. But I still hear some national pundits out there going like, well, he's got to make the team first. And I'm like, man, you guys got to get boots on the ground. He's making the team. Like that's happening. He's going to be on the 53. I think the question is now, are they going to have four quarterbacks on this roster? Should they carry four? Would they carry four? Is that a stupid or smart thing to do? Or, okay, can you trade either one of the two older ones? Kenny Pickett's not that old, but can you trade either one of those guys? Or would you just cut them and move on? I think that that's more the conversation that's going to happen. Like right now, I think it's more important. I heard Aubrey Brewer yesterday, and we're going to play some audio from Aubrey Brewer yesterday as well on Afternoon Drive. Let me tell you this. I think that with the two older guys, with Kenny and Joe, I think that's more for the veterans. That's more for the fans. I don't know about Kenny, but definitely Joe. The most important thing is to get Dylan Gabriel and Shador Sanders good with the nomenclature, good with the rest of the team. I don't think that when it comes to the fans, this is why I
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Service is not available in all areas.
I think that, if you are looking at the stuff on the internet and seeing the, well, Shador Sanders was 7-for-9 and we're using this in any serious thing, I think that's really dumb. I just think it's dumb. It was just past OTAs. It's mandatory minicamp. Completions and things like that. Like, yeah, you want a guy to throw a good ball and you want the guy on the receiving end to catch the ball, but you want guys to run the right routes. You want the guy to call the right play. We're not in a position right now. And frankly, like, they take it seriously because they want to put their work in. The intensity doesn't get turned up until training camp. Yeah, I heard Nick and Jonathan, I'm not trying to rip on them, but there was a part a couple days ago where they said, well, I think with vets, it's more boom or bust with the rookies. I don't think they see it that way. I think they all come in with, what are you doing every single day to conduct yourself as a professional? What do you know as far as the nomenclature? Like, what do you know as far as the football? Yeah, and these are things that, again, when we're looking at 6 for 9 in 11-on-11s, you don't know anything. Didn't it's just playing pitch and catch.
Didn't they used to say Brett Favre was terrible at all this stuff?
Yes.
So yes. Imagine if there was a tracker and it was right now in his rookie year, what people would be saying about, what was he, Atlanta when he started out? What would they be saying, right?
So we want to speculate, and we can speculate all we want. I mean, I talked to some people yesterday who the veterans are really not in town right now. They're getting their final days in, 4th of July is coming up. Be careful out there, boys. And they're getting their final days in before it's time to go to camp and get nuts. Yeah, I was talking to somebody yesterday about this. And the guys in the locker room, the guys on the offensive line, if you really want the skinny on it, forget about passing and catching in yards. They are impressed with what Dylan Gabriel knows. They are impressed with the work ethic Shador Sanders has with what he wants to know. You can tell that he might be a little bit behind, and I think I have a theory behind that, and it's a personal theory. They could tell he started a little bit behind, but he's picking it up. They also know that it's June. And when the heat turns on and when you're actually in those, like, those other practices where you have another team going after you and the joint practices, that's when you're going to start to find out. Because things will shrink. Because guys won't be as open. Because they're competing for jobs. So now you're really going to have to call it the right play at the right time. Develop the rapport as best you can with those around you. And try to deliver the ball and try to move the offense, quote unquote, down the field. But execute the play the way you want in the drill of how you can do it. Like, that's where it matters. But if you really want the inside stuff on any of it, I'll tell you. They're very impressed with Dylan Gabriel and what he knows. And they're very impressed with Shador Sanders and how he wants to know it, his willing to work in. They knew that he was a little bit behind to start off, and he's picking it up pretty quickly.
Yeah, well, that's what Albert Breer said yesterday, right?
Yes.
So I'm listening to that and thinking to myself, like, man, the bar right now, it's so fascinating to hear people, like, compare and contrast all these guys, because the bar is so low. Like, I imagine 98% of quarterbacks in the NFL, I'm not talking starters. I'm not talking good. I'm saying 98% of quarterbacks can go out in either rookie minicamp
play pitch and catch
and do that and do exactly what we're seeing. Like, holy cow, I'd be alarmed if stuff wasn't working for these guys right now. I'd be like, what a joke. But the reality is, like, most likely of Kenny Pickett, Shador Sanders, and Dylan Gabriel, most likely the odds are that none of these guys are actually going to have 7-year NFL careers as starting quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Most likely, that's if you're a 5th-round pick, odds are way against you. If you're a 3rd-round pick, the odds are you're a backup for your career if you can even hang on. Mm-hmm. That's why, like, stories like Brian Hoyer, undrafted, decade plus in the NFL, the money he made, that is the anomaly. So Shador Sanders and Dylan Gabriel are anomaly candidates. Like, You have to hope everything goes right for them to have realistic NFL careers, and with the Browns, to be starters with the Browns, especially considering what they have next year. So I'm coming into this with very low expectations. It's good that I'm hearing people seem confident in them, but this is what they have. Like, I mean, imagine a world where an NFL team would talk badly about their, and the people around the facility would talk badly about the guys when this is what they have. This is it.
Now, I told you what I know. I'll speculate here in just a moment after we play this Albert Breer, because I want you guys to hear this on why there might be a lack of first-team reps for Shador Sanders.
I think it's because he had a bigger learning curve than Dylan Gabriel. That's the reality of it. You know, I mean, Dylan Gabriel started how many games in college? Dylan Gabriel crushed his pre-draft process. Like, now that doesn't mean there wasn't stuff for him to learn along the way, but I wrote this back in March and April that there were teams that were like sort of stunned by how little Shedeur knew, you know, relative to what they thought, him being the son of Dion and having played for Pat Shurmur in college, you know, like, so I think Shedeur, and maybe this isn't any fault of his own, but I think Shedeur had a lot more ground to cover than Dylan Gabriel did. And so because of that, like, it's harder to put him out there with the first team. You know, again, like, you have to be able to answer to your players in these sorts of things. That's the way I look at it, at least.
Let me speculate just a moment here off of what Albert Breer just said with the guys in the afternoon, which was a great interview. Brilliant stuff from, and I mean that sincerely. Albert Breer was excellent yesterday. Listen to more of that, 923thefan.com. That's why you have to have the free Odyssey app, folks, wherever you're at. Timbuktu to Portland, Maine. It's absolutely free. Get the Odyssey app right now. Dylan Gabriel was in three different offenses. I don't know if it was three totally different offenses, but with three different programs. Okay? Three different head coaches. In Oklahoma, UCF, Oregon. If you're going to go and excel at those levels, buddy, you better know some football. You better know it. Shedeur has been with two. And this is where, and don't get mad. You're going to get sensitive. Not you. Everybody else is going to get sensitive. Dion, I do believe, is tough on his children. I do believe that Dion is tough on Shedeur and demanding of his son. But he's also going to put his son in the best position possible, is he not? And if it's still the same offense and it's still the same types of things of what you're doing and you're not really getting out of any other offenses and being able to expand that horizon, well, you have to do it in the NFL because the defenses are more complicated. The athletes are better. They're going to throw things at you that you may never have seen at Jackson State or Colorado. Those are great football teams that you're playing against at Colorado. It's still a pretty good conference. It's not the Big Ten or SEC, but it's still a pretty good conference. But you're going to get some stuff that you ain't never seen in the NFL with players that you have never seen in college football. And so he starts a little bit behind the eight ball there. It's not the overall reason he fell to the fifth round, for crying out loud. That, you know, we all have our different theories about that, and who knows. And we're going to have to get to a point at some point where who cares. But I speculate. Is he behind because he didn't want to know, or is it behind because, hey, we got hit the ground running and we have to go with the simplest offense and I'm your head coach. I was your head coach at Jackson State. I was your offensive coordinator in high school. I was your head coach at Jackson State and I'm your head coach at Colorado. We got to get this thing going here because we got to turn around programs. We got to turn around the HBCU program and we got to turn around the worst college football program in all of P4. Like, that's maybe speculative. And maybe that's not the truth. Maybe Shedeur just couldn't pick it up. We'll find out. We will find out soon enough. But if I'm hearing that his work ethic is there and he's picking it up quickly enough, then I'm starting to think maybe he was incubated a little bit. Because if Shador's naturally better than a lot of the guys he's going to play against, then, yeah, you're going to win more games than you lose. And they were able to do that in year two everywhere they went. He was able to do it. I mean, to go from 1-11 the year before they got there to 9-4 in a bowl game, that's a big turnaround. There has to be credit that's given to that. And part of that is taking care of the offense, taking care of the wins and losses with what you can do as a quarterback. And your father's the head coach of the football team. Now, I'm just trying to connect dots on that one.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.